This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Say yes to Pure Leaf tea and free gas for a year only at True North Convenience Stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This is Dan Ball on WEEI.
The 0-2, swinging a fly ball to center field, hit pretty well, but right back there to make the catch is Nate Eaton. The ball game is over. The Red Sox beat the Atlanta Braves 7-3.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome into WEEI. Dan Ball with you. Happy Sunday. It's just before 4 o'clock here on Sunday, March the 9th, 2025. Thanks so much for spending some time with us after a Boston Red Sox victory. And I just have to say, before getting into all of the, you know, the actual plays, who got hits, who struck people out, all that kind of stuff, there's just something that makes me smile about the combination of things that I just heard on that clip. It's dirty water, which means the Red Sox have just won a game, or the Bruins, if you're in that market, and that may not happen as much as we thought it would at the beginning of the season, but we'll get into the Bruins as well later today. And the sound of Joe Castiglione on a microphone calling Red Sox baseball. I know he's not doing it full time anymore. I know he's going to kind of pop his head in here, there, and everywhere. He's going to bag the occasional grocery at Shaw's and Star Market whenever he has a free moment. But just to hear Joe, very matter of fact, again, there's no real chit chat in between pitches. You kind of forget until you hear him again. It is, we're getting right into the play. I give our guy Joe Braverman a lot of credit because there is no break between the sounder that goes on the Red Sox radio network and then Joe is going the second after. But I love it because he's got baseball to broadcast, and there's just something that makes me smile, and it kind of reasserts, oh, baseball season's back. We're here. We are right back where Red Sox fans want to be. And I'm also happy to see that at least in a handful of games this spring, and we'll see how that kind of plays out during the regular season, that Joe is still going to be a part of the soundtrack of what is a Red Sox season that is starting to build a good deal of momentum. You're feeling different energy from the players. You're feeling it from the manager on down to the staff, and you're certainly feeling it from fans of the team. No question about that, that you're feeling a turn of the tides. It is night and day from the apathy and just the ho-hum, Sox are back, that I think we saw last year. And it's perfectly encapsulated in these spring training games that we've been watching, especially these weekend games where you start to see some of the regulars pop their heads in. Duran, Bregman, Story, the first three in the lineup today. Whew, that's going to be a fun group to watch based on what they've been doing this spring. But then you go from an exciting group of regulars into some of the more exciting prospects that the Red Sox have had since the days of Rafael Devers being a prospect. And Yoan Moncada, remember that name. And then on back to the Benintendis and the Bradleys and the Betzes and the Bogarts and all that kind of stuff. And we were lucky enough to have Joe Castiglione on the afternoon show on Friday. And he said something that really, as a Red Sox fan, I didn't, an excited Red Sox fan, I didn't need to hear, because it just, it furthers the delusion of what I want to have happen this season. He said the vibes that he was feeling, just the general energy around the team, having been down at spring training camp for a bit now and having watched the team and interacted with people, he said it was giving 2018 vibes. And I tell you what, I can't stand this in the month of March. I can't stand that just as daylight saving times hit today and I'm having to time out, okay, so when do I actually have to be into work today versus when I thought I had to be into work today, that I'm hearing comparisons to 2018. We're going to need to pump the brakes on that. There's many a question that still needs to be answered about this group where I think there were a lot more certainties and known quantities in 2018, but at least that's what Joe, who has seen eras of Red Sox baseball from the very best to the very worst, is saying about the mix of the adults in the room that Alex Cora has been bragging about this entire spring and the youth movement. The guys that are either fighting to make this roster or fighting to establish themselves and say, hey, I may be starting the season in AAA. I may be with the Woo Sox to start the year, but I'll be back. And when I'm back, I'm going to be an impact member of this group. So there are countless different things I want to get to specific to the Red Sox. And I want to get your thoughts as well as the Red Sox come off of a victory here against the Atlanta Braves 7-3, the Sox eighth win of the spring. And a lot of usual suspects both starting the game and out of the bullpen. You really saw a group of relievers today for the Red Sox that are your bubble relievers that are probably going to make up spots 5 through 8 in your bullpen, your middle relievers, so to speak. And even the guys out of the group of Bernardino, Kelly, Greg Weiser, Wyatt Mills, and Isaiah Campbell, the guys that don't make the team out of camp, out of that group, are still going to be impact parts of this equation at one point or another. So Bernardino's had a perfect spring so far, as has Greg Weiser. 2 innings of one-hit ball with 2 strikeouts. He looked very good. Wyatt Mills, quietly, a couple of saves this spring. He struck out the side in his 1 inning. Then there are numbers like Isaiah Campbell's 1080 ERA, and a number I want to get into a little bit later, though he did pick up the win. An inning, 3 hits and 2 runs for Liam Hendricks, who did win his second game of the spring, somehow blew his second save, and has an ERA of 13.50. So the bullpen is in and of itself a fascinating conversation, because I would argue, yes, you have veterans that have closed games before and been in high leverage situations before, but the performances of the guys who you were banking on to handle your high leverage innings so far this spring have not been impressive. And I know, all right, it's the beginning of March. We still have 2 more weeks before these numbers even really start to matter. So why not? Why are we overrating what a reliever is doing in 1 inning? I know, I understand that, but what else are we supposed to do? These are the numbers that I have available to me. And specifically to Liam Hendricks, hasn't pitched in like a year and a half. We're talking about the middle of 2023. That's the last sample size we have for Liam Hendricks. It's not his fault. It's just a fact. So regardless of that, 617-779-7937 is your phone number to call and to text. With the Red Sox coming off of a 7-3 victory, what impressed you the most and what's intrigued you to this point in the spring? Any position battles that you're focusing on as well? We'll get into all of that. Some updates coming from Alex Cora earlier on in the day, talking about the position battle at second base, as well as the potential for the Red Sox to add to this roster again. Which, with all of the conversation that we've had about, well, who's going to play where? Who's making the camp? Who's going back to AAA? Is Yoshida being DFA'd? Is Abreu healthy? And if so, where's Rafaela playing? These are all questions that we're asking ourselves. I found it very, very surprising to hear any kind of rumbling earlier today, and this came from Sean McAdam of Mass Live, that the Red Sox could be in the market for additional right-handed hitting help on this roster. So, naturally, I went to the MLBTradeRumors.com free agent list to see who was still available. And there are some names that I guess you could argue for. There's also a familiar name that I would not hate to see back in Red Sox uniform at all. But we'll get into all of that with your thoughts at 617-779-7937. We'll ride Red Sox with you here in the 4 o'clock hour on a Sunday. It's daylight savings time. It's light outside. The Red Sox are winners. Joe Castiglione is calling Red Sox baseball. We're in a great mood, and we've got more coming up next.
Survivor 48 is here, and alongside it, we're bringing you a brand new season of On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. If you're a Survivor super fan, you won't want to miss this deep dive into every episode where we break down how we designed the game, the biggest moves, your burning questions. It's the only podcast that gives you inside access to Survivor that nobody else can. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
Dan Ball on WEEI.
A base hit yesterday. He grounds this one left side. Bouncing into left field. A base hit. Runner hits third. Campbell coming home. Here comes the throw. It's cut off by the shortstop. And the runners hold at first and second. And an RBI single by Marcelo Meyer. He had an opposite field hit yesterday. This was a big bounding two hopper. Hit hard with a lot of spin. So the Red Sox now lead it 5-3.
Well, there you go. I mean, that's what dreams are made of, right, Joe? Campbell gets on. Marcelo Meyer drives him in.
More Joe Castiglione for your ears here on this Sunday, just after 4 o'clock. Thanks for being with us on WEEI. I'm Dan Ball. By the way, I want to say good afternoon to my man who's riding shotgun with me today, David Azier. David, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm good. Good Red Sox win today. Getting excited to unpack it.
100%. Well, it's great to have you here. Great to have everybody with us. 617-779-7937 is your phone number if you want to weigh in on a couple updates that were passed along by Alex Cora earlier today, as published by Jen McCaffrey of The Athletic, beginning with Christian Campbell, who will play more second base for the rest of spring training. So if you've been following along with the developments with Christian Campbell, he has split his time relatively equally between second base and left field. And the two different positions suggested a lot about what the Red Sox were thinking in terms of what their opening day roster would look like. If Christian Campbell is playing second base, either he has a chance to make the opening day roster, which, look, it hasn't been the greatest beginning of the spring for Christian Campbell, but I think today was another feather in his cap in that you're starting to see more of the well-rounded player, the well-rounded hitter, the menace at the plate, the guy who's really, really difficult, almost impossible to strike out or, you know, to strike out looking. You're starting to see more of that guy. He's only hitting .154 during spring training right now, but he was 1-for-1 today. He also walked. He scored the run that you just heard in that clip, and you're starting to see him get longer into at bats. You're starting to see him take more pitches, and not just take pitches for the sake of trying to work in at bat, or just trying to be up there and say that, hey, I didn't just strike out on three pitches, or I didn't ground out on the first pitch of the at bat every day today. Actually seeing pitches with an approach at the plate, seeing pitches in that you're trying to find the pitch that you can actually hit, the much more mature way of going about his at bats. You're starting to see more of that for Christian Campbell, and it's natural, and it's a breath of fresh air to see that, hey, this guy who has been lauded as one of the best minor league hitters in all of baseball from a year ago is starting to show those tendencies that we were all sold on, because I'll put my hand up and show some accountability. I don't watch a lot of Worcester Red Sox games. I don't watch a lot of Portland Sea Dogs games. I'll follow along with whatever the Twitter aggregators tell me to think about that, and I'll see a stray highlight from some of the guys that I like to listen to and work with. Cooper Boardman's a fantastic dude. Joe Weil, same. And if I see them put something on their timeline, let's see how they called this home run, this double, this strikeout, whatever it's going to be. So I'm more just relying on, numerically speaking, the fact that Christian Campbell was a monster, and all the reporting about him was that this guy's a game changer. Then he got into camp against actual major league caliber pitching, and It was underwhelming to this point, but there's progress there. And now he's playing more second base, which is a furthering a conversation that Alex Cora brought up earlier this week when he mentioned that the second base position right now is essentially a three-horse race. David Hamilton, Vaughn Grissom, Christian Campbell. That is no Alex Bregman anywhere to be found. So does this mean that Christian Campbell actually has a better chance to make the team out of camp? I wouldn't necessarily say yes to that, but I think it suggests to me that he is going back down to Worcester, but he will be back, and he is being targeted as the everyday second baseman of the Boston Red Sox at some point this year. Of course, there are a million and one different rules that the Red Sox can manipulate with service time for all three of these prospects in terms of if you send them down for a certain amount of time at the beginning of the season, they gain another year on the back end where they are under team control. Another arbitration year essentially is what they gain. So you'd have to imagine that may be the plan for all three of these guys, unless they're doing something where you simply can't keep them out of the lineup. And the reason that the Marcelo Meyer highlight was an appropriate one is that out of all three, he's been performing at the level that makes you go, huh, maybe this guy's the guy. The one issue with Marcelo Meyer, specific to the infield conversation, is that he has not played second base. So he was not mentioned as one of those second base finalists, so to speak, and they're not going to try to screw around with that at this point right now. So more second base for Christian Campbell. That is music to my ears, even if that means he's going to start the season in Worcester, because the last thing that I want to see with a guy who you're regarding as a top prospect and a guy who you want to be part of the equation for the next 5-10 years is to start screwing around with the position that he's going to play. Unless you see him as a full-time left fielder, and it's going to be for however many years, it's going to be Christian Campbell in left, Jaron Duran in center, Roman Anthony in right. And that's what you think it's going to be. Don't throw Christian Campbell in left field for 2 weeks while Willy Abreu gets back healthy from his GI issues that he was having. Just to throw him out there. Don't do it for a year until Bregman opts out of his contract and goes signs with the Dodgers or wherever the hell he ends up going, because they just seem to sign everybody. No, if he's a second baseman for the next 5-10 years, keep him there. Even if it means that he's not ready to be your everyday second baseman, you have guys that can hold the fort until he gets there. So the Red Sox not screwing with the development of Christian Campbell and promoting the fact that, hey, he's shown that he can be our everyday second baseman. We just need to give him more reps there and make sure that he's comfortable defensively. Because there have been a couple uh-ohs to this point. Them allowing him to do that is music to my ears. So that was the first note that came from Jen McCaffrey. Tristan Casas, back in camp, he was described as MIA with a laugh, which is good, with a chuckle from Alex Cora. He was one of the many players that are dealing with the illness that's going around the Red Sox camp right now. David, did you see Roman Anthony lost like 10 pounds from dealing with this?
Yeah, I also Abreu's been dealing with it throughout this whole spring training, so it must have started with him, but now it's been catching up to a bunch of guys.
Yeah, it's roaming its way around that clubhouse right now. No pun intended with Anthony, but it's unfortunate because this same thing happened to Vaughn Grissom last year, and he also lost whatever it was, 10, 15, 12. Like, he got super duper skinny, and it kind of threw his whole season off, or at least the beginning of his season. He came back when the games didn't matter in September and, you know, started to look like a baseball player again. But that's such a unique issue to be going on with this Red Sox camp, because it's if you lose 10 pounds and you're coming back and you're weak and you're trying to build up strength again and you're trying to be able to be comfortable eating regularly, it's something you couldn't forecast. You're hoping that at some point we can throw these guys into their own hotel rooms for a week and just let it, you know, do a deep clean of the clubhouse. I know that Joe Castiglione mentioned this on the broadcast, that everybody has a day off tomorrow. Good. deep clean that damn locker room. Everything, squeegees, just hose it, just put bleach in the hose and just spray it all over everything. I can't have more of this. Well, now I don't get to see Anthony or Abreu or all this other. The last thing I need is now guys that are actually performing well to then have to deal with this. So it's just a unique wrinkle that's going on with this camp. That's super, super annoying. As somebody who is just unapologetically seeing red right now, I love what's going on right now with this camp and where it seems like this team is. But now I gotta deal with everybody taking turns going to the toilet. Are you kidding me? Whatever. Costas is back in camp. That's good. I'm glad that he's feeling better. Rafael Devers. Remember him? Third baseman, or so he claims, of the Boston Red Sox? Alex Cora states that Devers will make his long-awaited camp debut on Wednesday. At what position? He would not say. A video came out from over this weekend of the Red Sox doing their infield, outfield, their IO drills, and both Bregman and Devers were over at third base. And the negatives across Red Sox Twitter were trying to nitpick of, oh, who's not smiling, who's got a scowl on his face, who looks like he's not happy to be there. The answer was neither of them. They looked like they were both having the time of their life. And it looked like, at least from just watching a video on my phone, and how much can you really glean from any of that, it looked like a pretty collaborative effort. We've seen a couple times when Devers has been good enough to go play the field during practice drills. It seemed like it's been a very happy-go-lucky, ongoing conversation between the two. Who knows? Maybe Alex Bregman, being the adult in the room, is actually teaching Rafael Devers a little bit about how to play third base, being that he is the infielder in Major League Baseball that has cost his team more runs, statistically speaking, since 2017, than anybody else in baseball. So whatever Alex has to say, he damn well better be listening to what he has to say. But the point being, Rafael Devers expected to make his spring training debut on Wednesday. And where is, at this point, I feel like a foregone conclusion. If it's a three-player race for second base, and you did not mention Alex Bregman as one of those players to play second base, well, he's got to play somewhere, and Trevor Story is healthy and tearing the cover off the ball. So he's not playing short. You did not say that he's playing second. As much as I think some Red Sox fans would like to ship Tristan Casas on a rocket to the sun right now, he's going to be your first baseman on opening day. So where is everybody going to play? It appears, based on the way that you've constructed things, and the fact that, once again, Alex Bregman hitting second, playing third base today. That's the Devers spot in the lineup also, which is just a little extra elbow to the gut. But that's okay. We'll see where everything slots out on Wednesday. It seems right now like Alex Bregman is going to be your opening day third baseman, and Rafael Devers is going to start the season as your third baseman. Now, is that going to be every single day? No. And again, take this report with a grain of salt from where I get this information. But I was listening to the Section 10 podcast on my way in, and it was the opinion of Jared Carrabas that the Red Sox will have a right-handed pitching lineup and a left-handed pitching lineup. And a lot of these conversations that we're having about who's going to play where is going to be solved based on who's on the mound that day. Do I like that? No. I think that's ridiculous. Personally, it drives me nuts when you don't just have a 1-9 lineup that you just can't set and forget. I understand that there are statistical benefits. Some guys hit lefties better. Some guys hit righties better. You know what a lot of guys do better? They play better when they know they're playing every day. When they know that I'm the sixth guy in the lineup, I'm playing shortstop, and I'm going to do that every single day until I need a break. And then they're going to pull me out. They're going to put somebody in for one day, and then I'm back. Lefty, righty, whatever. I prepare for my next day. I get into a rhythm. Don't give me any of this righties on the mound, this is the lineup, lefty on the mound, this is the lineup. Save for a change or two, maybe, I can't endorse that. So all of this bluster of who's going to play third base for the Boston Red Sox, it seems like it's over. And at least for the time being, it's going to be Bregman who's there. all of this is probably going to be thrown into a blender within the first month. Somebody's going to tweak, pull, or strain something, and all of a sudden this conversation is going to be moot. But for the time being, the way I read it is Bregman at third, Story at short. I would guess David Hamilton is your opening day second baseman based on the way that he's being talked about in camp. Casas at first, and then your outfield is likely, and we'll work with the assumption that Willier Abreu can work his way back and be ready for opening day. I know that's still up in the air, but I'll work with that assumption. Likely going to be Duran in left, Sedan Rafaela in center, Willier Abreu in right, Connor Wong's your catcher, Devers is your DH, and Massa, sorry, pal. You're going to be our highly paid cheerleader on the bench. I do love having that option as the first bat coming off the bench. He's shown that he can be clutch. That two-run home run on the last pitch of the game off of Clay Holmes last year, just, oh, chef's kiss. Unbelievable. So he's shown that he can do that. He's a very good hitter, good contact hitter. And I think if he's your 10th guy, I guess, coming off the bench, as much as, yes, it's a waste of money, oh, well, if you're a championship team and a team that's going to spend to the luxury tax, you're going to have some mismanaged money. That's just how it goes. You're never going to bat 100% in these big contracts. So as of right now, that is my personal read based on the updates that we got from Alex Cora. And again, you can go read the full story from Jen McCaffrey on the Athletics website. Devers is back. Bregman is still your third baseman. Christian Campbell is playing more second base, but I just would be surprised based on the way that he's performed and the fact that the Red Sox can manipulate his service time. Would be surprised if he made the team. Would be surprised if Roman Anthony made the team. Would be surprised if Marcelo Meyer made the team. Two starts. Hopefully, in a perfect world, things sort out where all three of them are in the mix in some way, shape, or form this year. But we'll certainly see. 617-779-7937 to join the Red Sox conversation with your biggest takeaways from spring training camp. We'll hit on a story that came from Sean McAdam of Mass Live coming up next, talking about the fact that the Red Sox may not be done adding pieces as the spring training camp moves along, and one specific piece seems to fit the equation according to the decision makers with the Boston Red Sox. We'll continue the baseball conversation in the 4 o'clock hour, and then later on in the show, more updates on the Brad Marchand saga that's developing with the Bruins and how it seems as though Don Sweeney and company may have mismanaged the situation, and that's why we ended up getting that groundbreaking trade. There's that. Plenty of NFL news and the Celtics. Remember how everybody was saying that the Lakers had the best duo in basketball? Yeah, I'd think twice about that. That's all on the table as we move along here on a Sunday on WEEI. But first, it's time for my good friend David Azer to tell you what's trending.
Dan Ball on WEEI.
Holder delivers over the top, and there's a fly ball hit deep to center field by Trace Thompson. He's done it again. He has. It's a home run. His sixth of the spring. Can you believe it? Those long strides circling the bases. Trace Thompson with his sixth home run. And this is only the Red Sox 15th game, and he hadn't played in all of them. But he launched it. Got it up into the breeze, so it's tied at three.
All right, I don't know about you. I did not have a Joe Castiglione, do you believe it, attached to Trace Thompson hitting a spring training home run on my Red Sox bingo card. But nonetheless, that happened, and Trace Thompson joins our next conversation that we'll have in just a moment. Catching up on some of the messages from the 978, maybe Hendricks and Alex aren't caring about results as much as getting pitches in. That's 1,000% true, and that's why me, off the top of the show, reading into a 1350 ERA is an irresponsible thing to do. But I hope that the pitches by the end of spring training start to look better. It's a short amount of time for how much time Hendricks has missed due to, you know, arm injuries, and then he was dealing with his diagnosis. Guy's been through a lot. But I can tell you one thing that's in his favor. He seems to be the ultimate ambassador for the Boston Red Sox. When you put him in front of a microphone or put him in front of a camera, that dude is hysterical. He's also very insightful. He'll talk about whatever you want, and he'll do it in an accent that makes everybody smile. 617-779-7937. I'm going to go directly off of the call screener. Brian and his son Anthony are joining in from Hopkinton. Good afternoon, guys. How are you?
Hey, good. It's so I got three boys in the car. We just came from baseball practice. I got Anthony, my son, who's 9, my other son, William, who's 11, and Joey, who's also 11. and they have a pretty strong opinion on this whole Bregman Devers thing. Who wants Anthony? You want to kick it off?
Yeah, I think that they should move Bregman to shortstop.
Okay.
And then play Devers at third.
Okay. That's
Joey. What do you think?
That's quite the take.
I think they should move Marcelo Myers to second, put Alex Bregman at short, and put Rafi at third.
Okay.
I think that's going to be the best lineup in the infield.
With Tristan Casas at first.
Sure, yeah. Of course. All right, fellas. Thank you for the call. I certainly do appreciate it. So, all right. So there's a lot to get to there. That is not what I was expecting, but hey, feel free to join in if you'd like to as well. 617-779-7937. Okay. So there's something in there that I want to get to. This is something that I heard on the Baseball Tonight podcast a couple of weeks ago when we didn't have spring training results to refer to Trevor Story. We were only working off of what we had seen in the regular season, which is a guy that's a plus defender at shortstop, but couldn't hit his weight for the most part when he was healthy with the Boston Red Sox. That led Buster Olney and Paul Hambakidis to have this conversation about the Red Sox infield.
We know that Rafael Devers is a liability on defense, but his defense, Buster, is not, it's not disqualifyingly bad. I think right. What is disqualifyingly
like
bad?
Like Piazza at first base for the Mets.
Right. There are plenty of those examples, and Rafael Devers is going to cost you at most 10 runs a year with his glove at third base. You can still win with that. What is far more disqualifying is having a shortstop who plays average defense with a on-base percentage below 300 and a slug below 400, and that's what they have in Trevor Story. Buster, if Christian Campbell is actually ready to play every day, Trevor Story, not Rafael Devers, should be the odd man out when it comes to the Red Sox infield. I see this very straightforwardly. Trevor Story, also Chaim Bloom's guy, is not the player that should be seeing at bat 600 times a year merely because of his defense. If you're looking to maximize your roster, the far better way to do that is to ensure that you field the best lineup, the best group of nine hitters every single day. And if that means that I'm playing Alex Bregman at shortstop, so be it. If it means I'm playing Christian Campbell at shortstop, so be it. I'm not willing to sacrifice a high-level bat to keep Trevor Story's defense at shortstop. In my judgment, Buster, Devers should stay at third. Costas stays at first. We're going to play Christian Campbell at second base, which is going to be his future. And I'm playing Alex Bregman at shortstop. I think he can do it. At least I think he can fake it. Your defense in the infield is not going to be good enough to call it plus by any stretch of the imagination. But your lineup is going to be good enough to more than make up for it.
Okay, so that was an argument that happened. And again, a lot changes in the span of a couple of weeks, which is more how I want to frame this conversation, where when we started to have the bubbling over of the Rafael Devers no controversy when he was asked if he wanted to play DH, that's when these conversations of, well, what the hell do you do if you're going to put Rafael Devers over at third base? The automatic answer that we were getting was, well, you put Alex Bregman over at second, a position that in his professional career with the Houston Astros, he has played for a total of 5 games. Okay, so that was the answer at the time. Shortstop is a bit more of an interesting conversation because in his career, he's played in 121 major league games, equivalent to 412 at-bats as a shortstop. In the minor leagues, he played in total 128 games with 125 starts as a shortstop. Played there way more than he did at third. Just by the way, he played 23 games as a minor league third baseman over 2 seasons, and then 2 seasons in the minors. He played 128 games as a shortstop. He was also exclusively a shortstop in college, 196 total games as a shortstop. So there is, ironically enough, more of a sample size of Alex Bregman playing shortstop to where you could probably justify him playing short for the Boston Red Sox more than you could justify playing second base. The reason that the conversation was happening at the beginning of camp of him being a second baseman is simply because he's just a good player. He's just a good infielder. You assume that with enough reps during spring training, with enough practice, and just as the season goes along, all right, this guy should be able to at least hold his own at second base. And it's a vast improvement, even if he's league average at best as a second baseman. It is a vast improvement over the revolving door of second baseman that you had last year. From David Hamilton to Romy, my homie, Gonzalez. Shout out to Will Fleming for that call. Connor Wong was playing second base for a little while. It was just a mess over at second base. You at least knew that you had all four positions in the infield settled. You had a starting blank every single spot in the infield, which is not something that you could say last year. So the shortstop conversation came before we saw what Christian Campbell was doing in spring training camp, which has not been impressive. And I think it's fair to say that a little bit of time in AAA just to get back to dominating the competition would not be the worst thing in the world for that player. So that's one. And number two, you have to acknowledge that Trevor Story's hitting .458 with a .1355 OPS in spring training so far. 1-for-3, drove in a run as well today. Playing shortstop, hitting third. The swing has looked great. He's hitting to all fields. You know already that he's a plus defender. And I know this is only spring training. So we're extrapolating stuff out of stats that at the end of the day don't really matter. If he comes in through the first month of the season and hits .122, then yeah, the conversation changes a little bit. But I think for the time being, there's a couple things at play. He's playing well enough this spring. He's healthy this spring. It seems as though he is kind of one of those adults in the room where he's kind of worked himself into being a leader. The way that you heard guys talk about him last year was a real nod to, even when he was injured, how much of an impact he was having on the clubhouse when he was healthy. So that's one thing. It really does feel like he's respected. He's building momentum in all of the elements of his game that you were hoping that would transfer over from Colorado. Now that he's healthy, seem to be firing on all cylinders right now. And two, guys, I'm sorry. He makes a lot of money. He makes a lot of money. There's a difference between the money and the commitment that you made to Masataka Yoshida and what you made to Trevor Story. He's an asset that your ownership group is not going to be happy with if he's not getting regular playing time. So, unfortunately, you're just going to have to suck it up and deal with it with one of your two contracts that were signed in the Heim Bloom era that are now kind of the albatross deals that you deal with, that being Story and Yoshida. So it was a fascinating conversation a couple of weeks ago. I don't think it's really a factor right now. What I will say is if Trevor Story continues this unfortunate stretch of getting injured, catastrophically injured, season after season after season, and all of a sudden now you see Devers, Bregman, Hamilton, Casas as your Trevor Story injury defense, wouldn't be surprised to see that at all, especially if you project Sadan Rafael to be your everyday center fielder for the time being until things work out with Roman Anthony. So I like having the flexibility, and I like being able to have this conversation. And I tell you what, none of what I just brought up over this last little soliloquy makes me roll my eyes. I'm happy if Bregman's at third, Story's playing something like this at short. You have a stopgap at second and Casas at first. I'm happy with that. If you want to do Devers and Story and Bregman and Casas, I'm fine with that too. I think it's a little short-sighted if you put Trevor Story on the bench to start the season. But I would still be okay with what the result is, what the infield looks like. I don't really think you can lose in this situation with the pieces that have been assembled. Unfortunately, the one element, and this came from a call, I don't know, 2 hours ago, but it just feels like that with this conversation. But Marcelo Meyer has not played a lick of second base in the minors, which I really find fascinating. I'm so surprised for a guy that's played shortstop and third base nearly equally in his professional career that he hasn't played one iota of second base. So, and it doesn't seem like that's going to continue, because with Christian Campbell getting more reps at second base, my guess would be he gets sent down to AAA, and he's playing second base every day. So what'll be really fascinating to see is, where does Marcelo Meyer land? Does he start as your shortstop in AAA or does he start as your third baseman? Is Alex Bregman a stopgap at third to get you to Marcelo Meyer, or is Trevor Story a stopgap to get you to Marcelo Meyer in the infield? Or do they know? They may not know. I certainly don't know. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. Appreciate any and all calls and texts on the Boston Red Sox coming off of a win here on this Sunday afternoon. Okay, to the point at hand, according to an industry source, the Red Sox have let other teams know that they're in the market for additional outfield depth, especially the right-handed hitting variety, from Sean McAdam of Mass Live earlier today. They've let other teams know they're in the, trade market, potentially. I looked through to see, well, if they were not in the trade market, but more in the let's bring in reinforcements via free agency market, are there any names that kind of wet your whistle, so to speak? And the answer is, not really. If you're going solely with right-handed hitting, if you want a reunion with right-handed hitting 36-year-old Adam Duvall, shout out to Liam Cohen. That's how he should have said it, by the way, instead of just saying it creepily like he did, but whatever. Adam Duvall is out there. He would provide a little bit of pop off the bench. He's got a little bit of versatility in the outfield. Okay, that's fine. You could also talk me into Whit Merrifield. Can't really hit the broadside of a barn right now, but extremely versatile. Can play infield, can play outfield, is fast, good defender. Can bring a lot of late-game defensive substitution skills to the table. So those are the two names that really kind of catch your eye. And look, does this make sense? No. You already have a glut at the DH position to begin with. But if Joe Castiglione is going to tell me that this year feels like 2018, am I not going to look at 37-year-old J.D. Martinez out there on the free agent market and go, that would be perfect? Now, it's not perfect because he literally can't play the field at this point. That would be, I'd rather see Masataka Yoshida play 162 games in left field than watch J.D. Martinez play an inning. However, right-handed hitting with pop that you know fits the Red Sox clubhouse, fits Fenway Park, and not for nothing, but after parting ways devastatingly with Xander Bogaerts, you're kind of without a Rafael Devers whisperer at this point. It was widely understood that J.D. Martinez and Xander Bogaerts seemed to be the two players that could really get through to Devers when he was a couple years younger. And again, you know, we're talking about 2018, 2019. Young Devers. Could get through to him, could have rational conversations and explain, you know, be able to explain things in a way that Devers not even would understand. This isn't a language conversation. It's simply just a leader talking to a younger player kind of conversation. And they'd have a way to get through to him in a way that few others did. And to Alex Cora's credit, he was also credited with being huge in the mental side of Devers' game. So, unfortunately, the math doesn't math on where you'd put J.D. Martinez. Unfortunately, unless you're planning something a bit more drastic, because we just went through what the infield outfield looks like. You have four spots on your bench that you're accounting for right now. One has to be for your backup catcher. Shout out to Carlos Narvaez, unless there's any other late camp changes that end up popping up over the next few weeks. So you have that. You have to have a utility infielder at this point. It would be David Hamilton, but he may end up starting. So it seems like it'd be either Vaughn Grissom or Romy, my homie, Gonzalez. Then your outfield spot is Rob Refsnyder, who gets almost no conversation during camp. It's just kind of widely understood, like, all right, he's your fourth/fifth outfielder, and that spot is written in pen. Let's figure everything else out, which is fine. And then right now, based on the way that it seems like things are going, if you work under the guise that Rafael Devers is your starting DH, Masataka Yoshida is that last guy on the bench. And so that would be the one element that would have to change if you were to ever justify, hey, my late inning bat coming off the bench or my righty when a lefty is on the mound, DH, is JD Martinez. I love the idea because I love the player. He was so fun to watch, meant a ton to the city of Boston in that 2018 run with what he brought just as an injection in the lineup. He was they read this off on the afternoon show. He was a 41-20 guy when he was in Boston. That's crazy. One of the quieter 41-20 seasons, at least I can remember, but maybe my memory's just already going at the ripe age of 26. So no, it doesn't make sense. I think you need more outfield flexibility. I would imagine that that's what they're looking at. And that's why the performance of Trace Thompson is really, really fascinating this camp. He hit his sixth home run, 12th run batted in, playing center field, hitting ninth today, hitting .391 with a .1794 OPS. Really? 33-year-old, hits right, throws right, nickname Rocco's uncle. Okay, that nickname sucks. Whatever, we'll work on that if he makes the team. He was, again, this is a guy that actually had a couple of meaningful cups of coffee at certain points in his career in Major League Baseball. 44 games with the White Sox as a rookie in 2015, hit .295. Played in 15 games with the Cubs in 2021, hit .250. And then with the San Diego Padres and Los Angeles Dodgers combined in 2022, I'll throw out the Padres numbers. He had .268 in 74 games, 13 home runs, 39 runs batted in with the Los Angeles Dodgers in 2023 or 2022. I'm sorry. Last year fell off, or 2 years ago fell off a cliff at the major league level, and last year was an unusable hitter at the AAA level. But 6'2", 225, outfield depth, can play all three positions, it appears, is hitting bombs in spring training camp. So, is Trace Thompson a part of this conversation at this point? Is Nate Eaton, who's also having a great spring, you know, the Bash Brothers between Nate Eaton and Trace Thompson, who hit home runs today? Are these guys part of the equation all of a sudden? It seems like they may be, but it's intriguing to hear that this team may be in the market for other right-handed hitters, because it implies that there's another move that's coming, because you're pretty much 13 for 13 when everybody's healthy in this guy plays here, this guy plays here, this guy's on our bench, boom, Bob's your uncle. Like this is our team. Other than the health of Brian Baio in your rotation and your bullpen, which we'll get to next, a lot of things are taken care of. So what does this mean for the health of guys like Devers and Abreu? And what does it mean for Yoshida? Because he's the one guy that continues to kind of fly under the radar of, he's here, he's playing well, but nobody really seems to want him, which is concerning. And it makes me think the Red Sox are still thinking of ways to handle the contract with this player. So all that's on the table at 617-779-7937 if you'd like to join the conversation on the Boston Red Sox. Don't forget, when the 5 o'clock hour rolls around, we'll flip over to the Bruins, Celtics, and Patriots, all three of whom are mentioned in headlines, big headlines, going on across the weekend in Boston sports. Quick break, and we're back with more right after this.
Dan Ball. Dan Ball on WEEI.
2-2 is swung on and missed, and Liam Hendricks turns, pumps his fist, and lets out an Australian roar. A strikeout, long time coming for Liam Hendricks. Gets a fist bump from Blake Sable, and now we'll get a round of handshakes as he walks into the Red Sox dugout. A scoreless inning, a complete inning for Liam Hendricks.
I don't know what the textbook definition is for an Australian roar, but I'm in on it. Whatever Cooper thought he heard, I'm in on that. And I feel like maybe there's a nickname in there somewhere. But regardless, back here on WEEI, 617-779-7937 is the phone number. Bringing you back with a highlight from Liam Hendricks from earlier on in the spring, because Hendricks is at the center of a conversation about the Red Sox pitching staff and where they go with some decisions. But some welcome returns over the last few days and with the few days coming up for the Red Sox, beginning with Garrett Whitlock. who made his spring debut over the weekend through a clean inning, which was great to see, and acknowledged, and I believe he spoke on the broadcast today too, he acknowledged that being a reliever is probably the best way for him to stay healthy and be the most effective for this team. And he's right, and he's also nasty when he is healthy and pitching out of a relief position for the Boston Red Sox. So Whitlock factors in really any number of different ways to the pitching decisions that this team is going to make, because we've seen him throw in that Swiss Army knife, prime Andrew Miller, multi-inning role, the innings eater kind of thing, the ultimate bailout guy in the middle of the bullpen. And we've also seen him pitch at the back end of games. He had a 3.45 ERA in 2022 with six saves. But then his first year in Boston, age 25, 2021, fun year that was, two saves, 46 total games, finished 11 games. And that was to the tune of a 1.96 ERA. Last year, started four games, was 1-0 with a 1.96 ERA. Good, but not healthy. So, unfortunately, as much as I think that if the plan from the beginning, and this goes back to before he joined the Red Sox organization when he was a Rule 5 guy, if the plan all along was let's make this guy a starter and you stretched him out accordingly, then, you know, there may be a middle of the rotation kind of arm here with the stuff that he has, but it's just one of those things you see far too often where it's very difficult for guys to be a reliever, then be a starter, then be a reliever, then be a starter, then be a starter, then be a reliever. Like, it's, you can only really bounce guys back and forth, I would argue, once. If you're going, and Garrett Crochet is the prime example. If you're going to take a guy who you believe is a reliever and stretch him out to be a starter, fine, you can do that. But once you make the reversal of the decision to go back the other direction, and now, you know what, let's shorten him out again. You can't start deciding based on what the weather is that day whether this guy's going to be a starter or not. So music to my ears that he's going to be a reliever. I think that there is an extremely effective, very versatile pitcher in Garrett Whitlock that's going to be a part of this equation. I would not be mad, nor would I be surprised, to see Whitlock factor in heavily in the late game, high leverage innings for the Boston Red Sox this year. Would not be surprised in the slightest. He's shown in fits and spurts that he can handle that. I'm all in on that. So that's one. The other is Lucas Giolito, who is slated to throw two innings on Tuesday against the Phillies. Chris Cotillo of Mass Live reporting that information. And that is consistent with what Alex Cora said to MLB Network last week, where he essentially stated everybody other than Cutter Crawford is on a path to where they should have a chance to be ready for opening day. The reason I don't make that as much of a certainty is because Brian Baio is still a little bit up in the air as to whether or not he's going to be ready for opening day. But everything else that was said by AC at that point was that Buehler, Crochet, Houck, and Giolito should all be ready to go come opening day. So a couple more trips around the rotation for the Sox means a couple more chances for Lucas Giolito to work himself back into game form. Will he be ready to go a full nine innings his first time out on a major league mound in the regular season this year? No. He's probably one of those guys that you're going to need to monitor closely and pair with somebody who can eat up two to three innings out of the bullpen. But that's okay. If he can work himself into a six-inning guy, which is kind of just that's your quality start number, six innings and three runs. If he can get himself there, fantastic. Would love to see if he can find his form, because that is a guy a couple years back in Chicago, as the Red Sox just become the dumping ground for all of the Chicago White Sox starters, that is a guy who had some very, very good baseball in that right arm of his before he was traded at the deadline and everything fell apart. And it's been a really rough last year and a half. But before that, there's a good pitcher there. So Whitlock back in action. We mentioned Liam Hendricks, and I played that highlight off the top, or my man David played that highlight off the top, because, again, the numbers suggest that this guy is still in the early stages of finding his form. I mentioned Garrett Whitlock in those late innings situations because I just don't want to write in pen that Liam Hendricks is going to be ready to handle the closer's role for this team at the beginning of the season. Can he close games? Sure. Is he going to be, all right, well, it's the bridge to Kenley Jansen is now the bridge to Liam Hendricks? No, I don't think that's realistic to expect that a guy that hasn't pitched in a year and a half is going to be ready to be the nails closer at the back of the bullpen, which is a conversation that we had all offseason. And is really the one place of this roster that I look at and go, they didn't do enough. Everywhere else, I'm perfectly comfortable with not only what you have on your roster, but what you're going to have in Worcester for it. Back end of the bullpen is that one spot that I go, I just don't know if they're there. Now, I cross my fingers and hope that this team is in contention come the trade deadline, and then you can get yourself a nice, shiny rental for the back end of the bullpen. But that is for July and August conversation. In the meantime, things starting to shake themselves out. Looks like Cutter Crawford will not be ready for opening day. I'm not sure how much we're going to see him, quite honestly, this season if things are as bad as it seems with this knee injury. But Bayo on track, everybody else in the rotation on track, and a lot of interesting decisions in the middle of the bullpen. That's why I read through that list of everybody who pitched today. I think everybody who pitched in this game after Richard Fitz for the Boston Red Sox all have a role to earn or a role to lose in this bullpen this year. So fascinating to see how it shakes out. And even if guys make it out of camp, the members of the taxi squad in Worcester are still going to have big-time impacts on what this team wants to do this year. Okay, full Red Sox conversation after a Sunday win for the Sox in spring training play has come to a close. When we come back, we transition to the Boston Bruins, who made headlines in a way that I think few fans expected Don Sweeney was capable of on Friday. Trent Frederick, that's one thing. Justin Brazo, that's another. Brad Marchand and Brandon Carlo, that is certainly another for the Boston Bruins. The trade is one thing, but the reaction and how trading your captain got to that point and why he's not a contracted member of the Boston Bruins right now is fascinating. We reacted to comments from Elliot Friedman of Sportsnet on the former Bruins captain after this.